This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Everybody's signing with their teams. There's going to be no free agents to fight over. So, I don't know. It's been kind of a strange offseason in that regard where everybody's just signing early extensions. But, geez, he's doing well. It's pretty cool to see that. So, but yeah, it's, I mean, obviously he deserves every penny of it and more. I mean, the guy's been the best player in baseball. He's probably one of the best baseball players ever. So, I don't even think there's anything to question about him signing that deal. I mean, he obviously likes it in LA and, you know, now he's there forever. So that's pretty cool. I'm happy for him.
Middays on the Score.
That's Chris Bryant. Of course he's happy for him. He's got a very good reason to be happy for him. The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. With only five home games remaining, the first place Chicago Wolves are making their push to the playoffs. Grab your pack and save with a Wolves fan four-pack. Tickets and food included at one low price. For ticket information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Joe Sheehan is on Twitter at Joe_Sheehan. He of Sports Illustrated Baseball America joins the Bernstein and McKnight Show on the Al Pomonte Ford Hotline. Al Pomonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Joe Sheehan tweeted this yesterday around this time. Mike Trout is the best baseball player ever. Joe, I know you don't tweet that just to sort of troll people. You tweet it because you mean it. Why is that true?
Yeah, you got to look at the long timeline of baseball. We know that players have gotten better over time. The game's gotten harder over time. It's gotten more selective over time. So if you just look at guys relative to their time, you've got Cobb, Bays, Ruth, etc. But once you start timelining and you say guys in 1920 were better than they were in 1900, 40 they were better than 20, and on and on, you really have to conclude that the very best players ever were playing in the last 30 to 40 years. And the very best player of the last 30 to 40 years is Mike Trout. So your short list for the best player ever is probably Trout, Bonds. And I think you can still make a case for Babe Ruth, if only because he stapled the third best hitting career ever to Mariano Rivera's pitching career. But to me, that's your short list for best players ever.
There have been a number. We were talking a lot about Mike Trout yesterday, obviously, Joe, and there were a number of White Sox fans, I assume, but baseball fans otherwise, that took Frank Thomas's first eight seasons in the bigs and compared it to Mike Trout's. Chris Kamka, actually, of NBC Sports Chicago, stat guru, maven kind of guy, they look fairly similar. The defense, though, stands out. I mean, that's just such a big difference for Trout. We were kind of talking about how he's not so showy. That people don't notice him enough. I wonder if you think that's something that we're going to have to fight against for a little while here.
Well, fundamentally, I thought Chris's graphic was fantastic. And doesn't that just make the case? Mike Trout is Frank Thomas, but a plus defensive center fielder who steals 30 bags a year. I mean, that's a pretty good case for the best player ever. I love Frank Thomas, guys. One of my favorite players in the 90s. And it just, that to me, I thought was a great illustration of just what we're talking about here. We're talking about an all-time great hitter who also happens to be, you know, like I say, a great defensive center, a good defensive center fielder. That to me is an illustration of how great Trout is. You know, it's nothing against Thomas. Thomas is an inner circle Hall of Famer, one of the best hitters we've ever seen. So it's really something that Trout doesn't get the recognition. And that's just a function of where we are with baseball today. I mean, you just accept that baseball is kind of slipped behind the NFL, slipped a little bit behind the NBA. The best baseball players aren't going to have that level of cachet that they used to. Also, too, it's just the nature of the game, right? I can go to a whole series. If Trout comes to Chicago and plays a three-game series, I might not get to see him in a big spot. I might not get to see him do anything. It's the nature of baseball. But over 160 games, he's going to be the best player.
Cubs world was rocked to its core by the revelation that Pecota had them projected to be at or below 500, finishing last in the National League Central. And there were, of course, the misguided criticisms of Pecota as being angry or biased or hating the Cubs, as we always hear. Now, if you read Joe Sheehan's subscription baseball newsletter, and if you're not, you're not only a bad baseball fan, you're a horrible human being, just an absolutely miserable person. You need to do that. You need to get that. When you wrote up the Cubs, you were a bit more positive, yet you pegged the possibility of total starting pitching implosion. I believe the term you used was, if the season goes pear-shaped on them, it would be a, you said, 25% chance of that happening. How did you arrive at that number?
Well, I want to circle back to something. I remember when we were, when Nate came into prospectus, Nate Silver being the creator of the Dakota system back in the mid-2000s. We had the meeting where we said, you know, we need to have a factor in here that, that goes against the Chicago teams because we're all biased against
Chicago.
Oh,
right.
Yes.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for letting us in on that.
The 2005 White Sox we hated, and, you know, I know Kenny was still mad about that. And now, of course, that blends in. So you really have to understand that Dakota does have an anti-Chicago factor.
There it is.
And now that Nate's with 538 and I've moved on, you know, it's still a big part of the formula. No, I think I'm higher on the offense. Because I just love that, that's what is still a very young offensive core in, you know, Brian Contreras, Rizzo, Baez. I'm still a big Albert Almora guy. I know people, you know, really love Kyle Schwarber. There's still so much young offensive talent there. The Cubs could lead the league in runs scored. But yeah, there's a lot of collapse risk with that rotation. You look at the strikeout rate, and that's really a big thing you look for projecting guys forward. You know, strikeout rate is the best predictor of future pitching performance, and it's a low strikeout staff. Cubs have gotten away with it during this run because they put these very good defenses on the field. And there could come a point where you can't keep making up for the strikeout rate with the defense. There's also not a ton of internal depth. So, yeah, there's reason to think that the Cubs are going to be playing a lot of 7-5 games this year. And I think they can win their share of them. The other thing is, this is as tough a competitive environment as there is. The Cubs could be the sixth best team in the National League and the third best team in the division.
I've been trying to reason out, Joe, where the power shift has shifted to, given the coming labor unrest. You know, 3 years out from now, we got a new CBA that's got to get figured out, and a bunch of guys signing big money contract extensions, not necessarily the free agent contracts, but the extensions. Are guys signing because they're worried about what's coming around? Are agents convincing people that these contracts need to get done because I don't know what's going to happen in three seasons? And if that's the case, where should Chris Bryant be in his conversations with the Cubs?
I think if they were signing for discounts, I might be a little more inclined to think that. But, you know, Nolan Arenado got, what, $260 million? Mike Trout got, you know, $360 on his extension. I don't think these guys are avoiding the free agent market. I think they like where they are. I think one of the things we do from the outside is say, you know, well, he wants to go to a winner or he wants to max out his dollars. And I think there's value for a lot of guys. If you're 27, 28 years old and you've lived in a place for 5 or 6 years and you've established yourself there, you say, hey, look, I can make all of these dollars and not have to uproot my life and not have to go through this process. So I don't look at these extensions as guys avoiding the free agent market. You know, you look at, oh, you know, do I want to go through what Bryce Harper went through? Do I want to go through what Manny Machado went through? But even those two guys ended up getting $300 million. So the fact that they got it in March instead of getting it in December, I don't think really affects your decision process going into free agency, Connor. I think the bigger issue for free agency is that second and third tier down. There's just not going to be money for the Mike Moustakas of the world anymore. Yeah. That market is gone. And what the union has to do going into the next negotiation is say, if you're not going to pay guys with 6 years of service time, 31-year-olds, average to average plus players, if you're not going to pay them then, we've got to find a way to get them paid when they're 25, 26, 27 years old.
We had discussed the rules changes in baseball, these quixotic attempts to speed up the game, because apparently there is some cohort of people that will watch a slightly shorter baseball game for some reason. And the biggest among these things might be this unilateral imposition next year of a 3-batter minimum. We heard Joe Maddon go all crazy because he doesn't want that done. Do you think that's the biggest one, or some of the tinkering around the edges with the roster more significant to you?
Yeah, I'm already recommending that people get their season ticket deposits in next year, because you're not going to be able to get tickets once this rule comes into play.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be standing room only at baseball parks because there's going to be one or two fewer pitching changes a game. I don't like messing with tactics. I don't like messing with gameplay in pursuit of this theoretical group of millennials that's going to show up for a 245 baseball game that isn't going to show up for a 305 baseball game. it's not that big a deal because baseball's already moving away from that model anyway. Guys, 20 years ago, the La Russa model was the way you ran your bullpen, right? You're lefty, you're righty, you're lefty, you're righty. But that's not even the model anymore anyway. The model is the way Madden runs his bullpen, where you pitch the seventh, you pitch the eighth, and you pitch the ninth. So this is solving one of the baseball's biggest problems in 2004, which is what baseball does. But the idea that this is going to move the needle in terms of pace or anything, look, the pace and time discussions have always been driven by guys who can't do their job until the game ends. This has always been my opinion. We've been having this conversation for 30 years. The game is too slow. The game is too long. And it's all driven by the people who, honestly, are at the ballpark and whose job starts when the 27th out is recorded. And I'm sympathetic to that, but the idea that this is going to suddenly move the needle doesn't mean anything. If baseball is going to fix its pace of play problems, it starts with balls in play. So the stuff that's happening in the Atlantic League this summer, where they're moving the mound back and they're trying automated strike zones, that's the stuff that might eventually fix baseball. I use the word fix in quotes. But right now, this stuff that's going in next year isn't going to move the needle at all.
Talking baseball with Joe Sheehan here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Wondering, Joe, which teams stand to improve the most by signing either or maybe even both Dallas Keuchel or Craig Kimbrell?
You know, the Braves to me have always seemed like a fit. The Braves have all of these young starters that even if healthy, they were going to be probably managing innings with. But to drop a Keuchel in there, a guy you know is going to give you, or would have given you, 30 to 32 starts, 200 innings, I think he would have made a significant difference for them. You look at the Yankees who have signed Sabathia, Happ, and now Gio Gonzalez without signing Keuchel. He's a fit there. But, you know, Keuchel's the kind of guy who fits just about everywhere, right? I mean, it's 30 starts, 200 innings of average to average plus pitching. Find me a place where that doesn't start. That starts in 22 ballparks. We had the first game of the season today in Japan, and it was Marco Gonzalez against Mike Fiers. So, yeah, I think Dallas Keuchel fits just about everywhere. Kimbrel's a little bit different because I think this collapse risk with Kimbrel. I've made the comparison to Greg Holland last year, and that's a bit of an extreme case. I don't know if I necessarily want to hang myself on that, but he costs you a first-round draft pick if you sign him. The command has certainly been lost. I don't think you're going to see Craig Kimbrel again. And when you put a guy like that in a high-leverage spot, which is what you're going to do if you sign him, he really could hurt you if he goes south. Plus, you're going to have to spend, you know, $16, $17 million to sign him, even if you just do the one-year deal. So I think Keuchel's a better fit than Kimbrel is. I think he has less risk. The issue now for both of these guys, and I think Keuchel's the bigger issue, is that he won't be ready to start until May 1st, right? It's March 20th today. These guys need a ramp up. So now you're only getting 24 to 25 starts and 170 innings. So the value of signing him has already been diminished.
So for Kimbrel, though, that doesn't necessarily exist. There's a school of thought that would say he waits until after the deadline, signs with whatever team for a prorated Google amount of money, and then you don't have to pay him the draft pick. Is that feasible to you?
Sure. The track record of guys who've done this is pretty bad. Stephen Drew did this. He had a terrible year.
Morales did this?
Kendrys Morales one year. I mean, the track record of these guys who don't sign until June and then play is pretty awful. Now, maybe it'd be different for a short reliever because the job is just so limited. Go and throw your 15 pitches 3 days a week. But I think you're getting into a performance risk there where, and also too, I mean, this is the reliever thing, right? How much difference is there over 35 innings between Craig Kimbrel and some random 24-year-old nobody's ever heard of who has the same 96-mile-an-hour fastball and half a breaking ball?
I believe a year ago at this time when you were talking about the White Sox, you had them on a list of teams that weren't going to be good, but you had them a watchability, I believe, is what you were saying, that if there were a non-contender that would be an interesting year-long follow, the White Sox would be one of them. Did that pay off? Were you right about that, and how does that inform your feelings about them this year?
I was surprised they lost 100. I mean, I didn't think they were going to be that bad. And some of that was that the pitching just didn't really come along, right? Lucas Giolito, you know, when he had an ERA over 6. But they did, you know, Rendon came back. He's one of my favorite pitchers. He came back in midseason. He was all right. Reynaldo Lopez turned out to be a much better starter than I expected him to be. I thought he'd end up in the bullpen. He was fine. You know, some of the hitters didn't really work out. You know, we were all excited about Nicky Delmonico at this time last year, and then that didn't really turn out. But, you know, Tim Anderson, I think, is a watchable player, if not necessarily a particularly good one. I mean, there's just a lot of young talent there. Now, the problem, of course, is this was supposed to be the next year, right? And, of course, you've got Giolito coming off a 6 ERA. Kopech got hurt. Dunning now is going to have a Tommy John surgery. Some of the hitters really didn't come through. They didn't go out this winter. Some of that last year was projected them to go out and make a big move this winter. And I know, you know, Kenny's disappointed he doesn't get to offer Mike Trout 8 and 200 2 years, but there's just not anything. They didn't make the big move this year. So I actually, if anything, I'm probably down on them a little more this year.
Because
2018, things didn't go as well for them as I might have hoped, and they didn't add to the team in the winter.
I'm with you on it, Joe, and I think one of the guys that's the focal point of not doing as well as you'd hoped in 2018 is Yoan Moncada. As excited as I am about Jimenez and as confident as I am that he's going to be a pretty solid player sooner rather than later, Moncada is the guy because of how he's struck out, just staring at baseballs, buzzing right by, that really puts the fear of God in a little bit of this White Sox rebuild.
Right, because you're still mad at Frank Thomas for not swinging at pitches 30 years ago. Moncada is, I got into a huge fight, I want to say on Twitter, midsummer last year, where White Sox fans were just crapping all over Moncada. I'm like, okay, he's 23. He's going to walk 60, 70 times. He's going to be a three-win second baseman. And it's his first full season. I think there are reasons to think that maybe the top-tier upside isn't that he's not going to get to that because of the strikeout rate. But if he has last year for the next 2 or 3 years, that's a pretty good player. And I think all he's got to do is cut the strikeout rate even a little bit. Now he's a 260 hitter, which means now he's a 340 OBP guy. And the power starts to come along a little bit. And you know he's going to run. You guys are closer to it than I am. I'm curious, how has he adapted to third base? I think that'll be part of it, too. Obviously, the bat has to hit. He has to hit better to be a productive third baseman. I'm curious whether the defense is going to hold up. I think it should be a better defensive team because I think Sanchez will be a better defensive second baseman than Moncada was. But I'm curious as to whether Moncada adjusts to third.
Joe, always great. Let people know how they can find your subscription newsletter.
JoeSheehan.com. I've been doing this now for almost 10 years after my time at Prospectus. I like writing about baseball. Definitely a stat head perspective. I bring to it, you know, for 25 years of doing this stuff. But I've gotten to do this newsletter now. I write a lot, particularly if you sign up now, you're going to get the season preview, which is a ton of material. I hope people enjoy it throughout the season. So JoeSheehan.com and then @Joe_Sheehan on Twitter.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, guys.
That is Joe Sheehan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.